This episode is sponsored by Verizon. Are you ready for your next assignment? As a leading communications technology company, Verizon is always looking for experienced leaders to step forward and help us stay competitive in the global marketplace. More than 10,000 veterans contribute their skills across our entire business. We're proud to work alongside them each day and fortunate to benefit from their outstanding skills, discipline, and experience. To learn more about joining our team, check out verizon.com/military. Welcome back to Beyond the Uniform, career transition advice for military veterans and their families. I'm Justin Asiri with episode 324, The Happy Lawyer with Peter Vanderloo.
Well, as I started to look at my career options in the law, I realized real estate contracts had a lot of pictures in them. So there's pictures of buildings, of lands, of roof, of different floors. And I guess I knew that's what I wanted to do because, as you may know, Marines really prefer to read picture books. And so I figured, let's go into the area of the law that has the most pictures in the contract. So that kind of was a natural fit. But no, seriously, from my first days in the Marines, I learned to love the dirt. And I don't know if you know this, but they call real estate lawyers, some people call them dirt lawyers. So I guess maybe there's a natural fit, potentially a natural overlap. And in Quantico, land navigation was totally my thing. So looking at a map and figuring out what the ground looked like, it came naturally to me. I spent my entire active duty time, in fact, with a 1-to-50,000 scale map shoved into my cargo pocket.
I really enjoyed my conversation with Peter. First, I want to acknowledge that this is a sponsored interview, and we're very grateful to Verizon for their support of Beyond the Uniform, as well as how they have hired over 11,000 veterans and thousands of military spouses. However, there's only about 6 minutes of this interview that are directly about Verizon in a way that may be seen as salesy. The rest of the conversation, about 54 minutes of it, are really incredible because Peter is such a fantastic speaker and storyteller. Immediately after our interview, I set up a call with Peter to chat more, to get his advice, because he's a great guy and has a really valuable perspective on career transitions and the veteran space. One of the aspects I love about our conversation is how Peter took one small aspect of his military service, how much he loved land navigation in the Marine Corps, and how he used this in his search for his next job, which happens to be in commercial real estate as a lawyer. Not a direct connection many would make, and yet it shows how veterans can find tangential career paths based on smaller aspects they enjoyed while in the military. I also appreciated Peter's outlook on life. The mere fact that he has a title of Happy Lawyer sends a message to everyone he meets, and more importantly, sends a strong message to himself about who he wants to be on a daily basis, even on those days where he may not feel like a happy lawyer. This interview is also a great example of the wide variety of career positions to be found at large companies. For example, with Verizon, many listeners like me most likely immediately think of phones or connectivity when they hear Verizon. But I didn't think immediately about all the stores, all the warehouses, all the office buildings they have, all that real estate that needs a strong legal team to help obtain it and oversee it. It's illustrative of the many potential career aspects below the surface that listeners may not immediately be aware of. As always, at beyondtheuniform.org, you'll find show notes for this episode with links to everything we discuss, as well as 320 other episodes just like this. So with that, let's dive in to my conversation with Peter.
Dive.
Well, joining me today in Leesburg, Virginia, my guest is Peter Vanderloo. Peter, welcome to Beyond the Uniform.
Thank you, Justin. Great to be here today.
So listeners, here's what you need to know about Peter. He is a happy lawyer at Verizon, where he's worked for over 18 years. In his current role, he works as a commercial real estate lawyer, creating value for internal and external customers from Verizon's amazing, extensive real estate portfolio. He started out in the Marine Corps, where he served for 10 years, most recently as a company commanding officer, where he led an 150-member light armored vehicle company. He holds a Bachelor of Arts from the University of Delaware, a Juris Doctorate from the George Washington School of Law, and an MBA from the Darden Graduate School of Business. So Peter, maybe to start things off, what's not in the public bio that you want to make sure listeners know?
Well, thank you for that intro and lead in, Justin. I could listen to your voice all day long. I'm sure you've had people tell you it's like butter, because it is. It's pretty awesome. So let me try to, you know, as I thought about it, one of the things that may be kind of key to you thinking about who you are as a person and your military experience is that you should never really underestimate the power of being a role model or leading by example. So my own personal story of this was my father. In 1966, Vietnam was heating up and the war was becoming real and raw. And really, some people started to look negatively at military service, even try to avoid it. In that context, my father volunteered to go on active duty in the Air Force. So I didn't realize it at the time, but when I became an adult, I looked back at my father being a role model and his selfless service, his decision really kind of influenced the trajectory of my entire life. I mean, half his graduating class went to Vietnam and half stayed stateside. He ended up staying stateside, so he didn't go to Vietnam. But still, the fact that he did that at a time when maybe it wasn't as popular made me realize how valuable he viewed military service. And so as a role model, I kind of follow that in life. Now, interestingly enough, my father not only had myself, but two of my younger brothers also went into the military. They joined the Marines like I did. So I would say, you know, keep in mind that by the virtue of your military service alone, you are a role model to somebody somewhere, whether or not you even know it. And I want to add the other kind of neat thing for me. So as a result of my father's service in the Air Force, I was actually born on Richard Skibar Air Force Base. So interestingly enough, my date of birth was the 11th day of the 11th month, and I was born at the 11th hour. So, you're starting to say, that sounds a little bit like Armistice Day, right? Yeah, that's exactly right. So being born on active duty Air Force Base, my father was serving on Veterans Day. I kind of had no choice. I had to go into the military. It was sort of my life's trajectory. But I want to share one more little thing here too, and this is a personal story. So Justin, I don't know if this is kind of going along with it, but I'll just throw it in here. So my proudest moment in uniform really came with my father. Just before I deployed to Desert Storm, for the Marine Corps birthday ball in November of 1990, my parents drove 12 hours each way from New York to Fort Knox, Kentucky. I was training with the Army there. At that time, the president had just authorized the National Defense Service Medal. And so on my Marine Corps dressable uniform, I was wearing that. When I realized my father was going to make that 24-hour trip to come and see me, I was so grateful for him. I went out there and I got him a miniature version of the National Defense Service Medal, which of course he had earned during his Vietnam era service. And so it was very much a proud moment for father and son to be standing there as I'm preparing to do my part, seeing my father had done his part, and we're both wearing the same National Defense Service Medal. So that's really kind of an enduring moment for me.
That's powerful. I love this sense that sometimes the biggest impact we have, we might not even be aware of. It's not this like huge decision where you're choosing to be a leader, an example, and yet realizing the ripple effects of your father's decision. And I also love for listeners, especially for our listeners who aren't in the military anymore, to realize that even though that uniform has come up, being part of that less than 1% of those who chose to serve their country, they continue in their community and neighborhood and families to be an example, to be a role model, whether they realize it or not. And I cannot let it go that your father served in the Air Force and all of his children went on to the Marine Corps. Any ideas what led to the three children going rogue and going to perhaps the superior branch of service there?
Oh, Justin, thank you. I appreciate that. So there's a little more to the story. My father eventually went into the Navy at the end of the Vietnam era. In 1975, he joined the Navy. And we went to a place called Cherry Point, North Carolina, Marine Corps Air Station. This was the bicentennial of the Marine Corps birth founding and the bicentennial the next year of the birth of our country. So 1975, 1976, I was surrounded by Marines in dress blues. I was surrounded by Harrier jump jets. I was just so brought into the Marine culture that as a 10-year-old, I didn't see any other way but that being my future.
That's great. Well, let's go back to your maybe the starting point of our story, which is your 10 years in the Marine Corps. And for many guests that I've talked to on the show, that can be a difficult decision. You're kind of halfway there to a very appealing retirement. It can be difficult to know whether to just go all the way or get out. Could you walk us through how you decided to leave the Marine Corps and also kind of at what point you realized that the law was something that you wanted to pursue in a deeper way?
Yeah, of course. I will tell you actually, when I went into the Marine Corps, I intended for it to be a temporary thing. I really was intending to be a citizen soldier. I was going to do my service, my initial 4 years of service, and then get out. I already had plans to go to law school. So my father, incidentally, had done the same thing. After service in the Air Force, he went on to practice medicine. What I didn't realize, though, is that after 4 years, as my time started to come up, it was really hard to leave. I mean, I loved what I was doing. I felt an immense sense of purpose. I could see the direct impact that I had. And so I nonetheless had plans and had done some things to prepare myself to leave. And one of the things I want to mention to folks, and if you're eligible, to help with the withdrawal symptoms from being in the Marines, I remained in an active reserve role. And that's really where I filled the rest of that 10-year period. I did that while I went to law school and also, as I call myself, a baby lawyer. So it is a nice way to continue to be a citizen soldier if you're eligible, if you're not at a retirement point in your life. Now, practical pointer, right? So even knowing that I was going to be going in for 4 years and leaving, for those of you who may be on active duty, it's never too early to plan for that next step because, when I was strutting around in my Marine Corps uniform, my father reminded me I was born a civilian and I would become a civilian again one day. And so kept that in the back of my mind. And as I was looking ahead, I started to do things. Really, the last year of my active duty time, I started planning. I would encourage you folks who are on active duty or looking to get out to do this too. I started taking law school aptitude preparation tests. I went to a local community college to study some law. And of course, I applied to law school. Of course, these good intentions were almost a little bumpy. I missed one of my finals because I was suddenly called to deployment on active duty. And I almost by like a couple days, almost missed taking the LSAT, but fortunately, I didn't take that one. So that's again, I think my role, my goal, my, sorry, stumbling. So again, I think that's my recommendation is look ahead to what the next thing is when you're on active duty.
That's great. I wrote down that quote. I haven't actually heard that before, but I was born a civilian and would become a civilian again one day. I think that's such a great reminder. I think of the guests that I've interviewed who had aspirations to serve 30 years and then injury or medical condition forced an unexpected departure. I know people who, for various reasons have left. And so the truth is, all of us that put on a uniform will one day take it off. And I love your example of the proactive nature of taking these classes, of taking the preparing for exams. And I think your story is also great because, within days, you almost missed the LSAT. You had spent so much time preparing. And
Yeah.
I think that that's even better guidance for advanced planning because, due to the nature of our military service, we have a lot of unpredictability in our schedule. And if you were, 6 months away from getting out and maybe something prevented you from that exam, that would be a major wrench in your transition plan. So I love this thought of really taking the reins far in advance there.
I got lucky, honestly. I mean, there's a lot of folks who maybe have that V billet, that secondary job that isn't an active combat unit, and they have a little bit more flexibility. But even if you're still in that situation, do try to plan as far ahead as possible, 1 year at a minimum. And I would say for that reason, Justin, you're right, probably closer to 2 years before you get out. You should start to really look seriously what credentials, what education, what other qualifications you might need for that civilian job that you want.
And I also want to point out for your listeners, I think that oftentimes people in the military can pigeonhole themselves into this is what I did in the military, and therefore I will do something similar afterwards. One of the things I love about your story, Peter, is that you had built up a lot of career capital in the Marine Corps around leadership, around combat, around all sorts of different skills. And even after 10 years of that, you were able to get out and do something that, from my perspective, seems wildly different, commercial real estate law. And I want to point out for our listeners, you know, even 10, 20 years, even 30 years in the military, if you want to, you can have a very full and fulfilling civilian career that has nothing to do with that. Like, you still have a lot of room after your military service. And I was curious to learn about, like, what was it that attracted you to commercial real estate law in particular, or real estate law in particular?
Well, as I started to look at my career options in the law, I realized real estate contracts had a lot of pictures in them. So there's pictures of buildings, of lands, of roof, of different floors. And I guess I knew that's what I wanted to do, because as you may know, Marines really prefer to read picture books. And so I figured, let's go into the area of the law that has the most pictures in the contract. So that kind of was a natural fit for me. But no, seriously, from my first days in the Marines, I learned to love the dirt. And I don't know if you know this, but they call real estate lawyers, some people call them dirt lawyers. So I guess maybe there's a natural fit, potentially a natural overlap. And when Quantico, land navigation was totally my thing. So looking at a map and figuring out what the ground looked like came naturally to me. I spent my entire active duty time, in fact, with a 1-50,000 scale map shoved into my cargo pocket. And then, you know, we would get, for some of these specific ops, we'd get these neat kind of intel assets that were like target area pictures of buildings, streets, landscapes. And in fact, that spatial training came in pretty handy as a lawyer. So the first time that I had to trace out what we call the meets and bounds, that is the boundaries that go around any particular real estate parcel, I felt like I already had quite a bit of experience in looking at a picture and trying to translate it into real life.
That's wonderful. I love that, because you're finding something you liked in the military. And I'm guessing that's a small part, a very important part, but a small part of what you did in the military. And I think it's a good reminder for especially listeners on active duty to do the dissection to understand the piece of their service that they really love. And it might be just a tiny fraction of something that they want to dig further into. And I would have never put together the dotted line between land navigation and enjoying that and the aspects that apply to real estate law. That's really incredible. One of the things I love about your title, Happy Lawyer, is I'm guessing that you're pretty fulfilled. You've been fulfilled in this career decision that you made. And I'd love to maybe fast forward to where you are right now. Talk to us about, what does that mean? You're a happy lawyer at Verizon. Help us understand what that looks like on a day-to-day basis, the type of things that you've done with Verizon.
Yeah, sure, Justin. Thank you. I want to add maybe one final point that I would... Thank you. I think you summarized it well, but don't underestimate the skills, training, and life experiences that you earned in the military. It truly can translate into so many different things. And even just the ability to learn, I think, will take you a long way in the civilian world. Mm-hmm. Now, I call myself the happy lawyer, and there's a story behind that. When I left active duty, at my farewell ceremony, my commanding officer was general at that time, Lieutenant Colonel Kelly, but General Kelly. And he told me, as he was saying goodbye, "Pete, you're a fine Marine. I know you won't become just another lawyer." Mm. Well, I decided I didn't want to become just another lawyer. So I decided to become the happy lawyer. And, you know, that title causes a lot of conversations to start, right? I wear that title like an invitation. It's an invitation for people to ask me about it. And that way, I can tell them that story. I can tell them about my military experience. And as you mentioned, Justin, fewer and fewer people serve each year. So those of us who have, we have an obligation to educate others about the benefits of military service. And, you know, I will say that working at Verizon has been a company that truly embraces, understands, and promotes military experience and taking those skill sets and putting them to work in the workplace. You know, I actually came to Verizon through a secondhand way. I was for a long, long time at AOL, America Online, the internet company. And then Verizon bought us. And after that, they combined us together with Yahoo. And through that acquisition, I've eventually made my way into Verizon. So I've seen different organizations and how they understand and value the military experience, and Verizon is definitely at the top. It's not by accident the number one military employer of the year.
So a couple of things I want to unpack there. I love this sense of the conscious decision. I just love the act of your self-branding of I am going to be the happy lawyer. And I'm just a personal believer that these decisions, they become self-fulfilling prophecies. Mm-hmm. Like if you're going to put out to the world that I'm the happy lawyer, I can only imagine the thousand things that that affects every single week of your decisions to be happy and to pursue work and colleagues that make you happy and to develop skills that drive fulfillment. I can imagine how adopting that mantle really taints the way that you show up with others. And I love the boldness of it too, as a conversation piece. I have this story, true or not true, that oftentimes military veterans can avoid the spotlight, avoid scrutiny, avoid standing out or drawing individual attention. And to me, there's something that screams attention and saying, I am a happy lawyer. And I think that's a great example for listeners to see you putting yourself out there, which takes a lot of courage. I'm sure it probably brings some jokes and some friendly ridicule. And going back to your central point with your father, you are being an example by putting that stake in the ground that I'm the happy lawyer, and by shouldering that burden, you are serving as a great example for myself, for listeners, for so many people you've interacted with over 18, nearly 20 years now at Verizon. I think that's really wonderful.
Yeah, thank you for that. You know, I find that the happy lawyer title, it is, in some days, it is an exact mirror of who I feel like when I show up to work, when I show up to my neighbors, when I show up in the community. And some days it's aspirational. Like I'm feeling not like a happy lawyer. And then I remind myself, hey, you're the happy lawyer, man. You need to bring it. You need to bring it big time. And it does, as you said, it does kind of require me to bring my best self every day.
I think that's great too. I think that in this Instagram era, there can be this temptation to just say like, yes, I'm the happy lawyer. I'm always that. This is who I am day in, day out. And I love the vulnerability and honesty there of like, yeah, of course, there's going to be days that are so rough. And I'm sure that you're looking at that title some days and it is the aspiration. It might not be true in that moment, but I think there's a power there of putting that vision of who you want to be and that you can strive to be that every day, even if you don't feel like it day in, day out. That's wonderful. Could you take us through what you talked about how really your entrance into Verizon was through AOL, and that seems like a pretty critical decision. Could you talk about how that job opportunity came about with AOL?
Well, so AOL came about really, I think, through a network. Mm-hmm. And I'll talk later about how important it is to maintain networks. We take for granted in the military that we have these networks. We're automatically a part of a team, whether it's a fire team or a squad or a company or a wing, whatever it may be. But in the corporate civilian world, you really have to actively work on creating your network. And this opportunity came about because of a network. I worked at another place with a lawyer who went to AOL, and he said to me, hey, they're hiring at AOL. At that time, the company I was working for was in bankruptcy. And so it was very appealing to work for a company not in bankruptcy. But, you know, I will say one of the things about it, AOL at the time, you know, I was working as a real estate lawyer, I was working as a network lawyer, and they said, we don't have those jobs open right now, but we have a job open as an advertising lawyer. And I thought to myself, you know what, let me be honest with them that I don't have the advertising skills, but also let me be honest with myself that I am willing to learn, to grow, to change. It's what we have to do in the military, right? You may not get that perfect job every time, and yet you still got to wear your uniform. You still got to come in and serve in the role you are. So I said to them, look, you know, I don't have any advertising background. They said, no worries, we'll train you. And I went in both feet and loved it. And it, again, expanded my legal repertoire. It expanded my understanding of how the internet works. And it was like another opportunity for me just to say, you know what, I can do these things that I originally didn't think I'd do. For those on active duty, again, there wasn't anything more than just the positive thinking, the ability to be mentally flexible, and also the willingness to kind of dig in and learn and you know, become good at a new job. And you know, those are skills that you have on active duty.
Mm-hmm. That's great. I think that last point kind of sticks out to me. I love that sense, being willing to dig in and become good at a new job. I just think back to my mindset. I was in the Navy for 5 years. When I left, I was the senior lieutenant. Great position to be in. You know everyone. You're kind of at the peak of your relative game. Mm-hmm. And I think the mindset I had there was like, okay, I've got this figured out. And then to transition from that into a completely new environment, I love being willing to like adopt that mentality of like, look, I got to the position I was in the military because I was willing to roll up my sleeves and learn and adopt this learning mindset. And then to realize for me after 5 years, like I got to go back into that learning mindset. I got to learn something completely new, something I don't know about, something where I am the low man on the totem pole. Yeah. And I can only imagine after 10, 15, 20 years, how much more difficult that becomes, but how important that statement is, being willing to dig in and become good at a new job, how vital that is. And I guess that relates to your other point about being mentally flexible. That's awesome.
No, I do talk to a lot of veterans that are transitioning, and those that have been doing their military job for a while, they have this sense of, you know, change always brings a little bit of loss. And that's probably the thing that you feel in change, is the loss of what you had and what you're changing into. And I remind them that, you know, if you're going to be in the situation where you're not taking the same kind of civilian job as you had in the military, you're a career switcher. But the nice thing is, if you truly focus on that new career, you may be at the bottom rung of a new ladder, but you have a ladder and you can then work your way back up in there. And I think, you know, that to understand that it isn't just this one job, but it's, they have the same ability to move on up and to get bigger, faster, stronger, as we say. And I think that helps them to understand when they're doing this career switching that it's not permanently going to the bottom, but really starting again so that you can credibly move your way up a new ladder.
That's great. I have other questions, but before I deviate, I wanted to ask you one more question about your current role. And that is, I think for myself, for many listeners, they obviously know Verizon. They probably associate it with a phone, with something internet related. And your title is kind of this unexpected thing. And it's like, okay, commercial real estate. So the wheels were turning for me. And I thought, wow, okay, Verizon has many stores. They have many physical locations, and that's just one facet of Verizon that I know. And so I started to put the pieces together of like, oh, of course, they must have a pretty large physical footprint across the United States and even across the world, and therefore they're probably buying property, and therefore they need legal expertise. Could you maybe unpack that a little bit of like, what is this sliver of Verizon that you deal with that might be below the surface for a lot of people? They might not even realize all that's going on behind the scenes.
Sure. You know, a technical term to describe Verizon is a facilities-based telecommunications company. So from the days of Alexander Graham Bell, there were need for central offices. There was a need for a network to be physically connected from place to place to place. This also grew into administrative offices, and in the 20th century, technology centers. We have tens of thousands of locations with hundreds of millions of square foot of space. So let me just say that if you're not familiar with what that means, that's a big real estate portfolio. And it's kind of neat because one of the things we do is, you know, we manage that portfolio to keep the trains running, so to speak. But we also manage that portfolio to unlock value that may have been hidden. So when we have potentially built what's called a central office, when everybody had the wired telephone line that went to their house, there was a need to have all the switching gear. And they're located in every little town and many of them in the bigger cities. Now, when they were built for a specific purpose, but sometimes they're in a location where there's now a much higher, greater value of the land that's there or around them. And in that case, one of the kind of neat things we're doing is we're looking for ways to maintain our physical structure, but also maybe add value onto the real estate. So for example, we've done deals where we've left the central office in place and we built upward. We've done some redevelopment. So we still own the property, but we're unlocking the additional value there. I think it's kind of neat because it shows that Verizon, which is calling itself, I love this, Verizon 2.0. What they're really looking to do is they're really looking to help folks understand all the additional services that they bring. One of the neat things about my network, and I'll talk a little bit about this later, is that I get to deal with people across the company in all kinds of different business units. So of course we have the wireline, which is the hardwired phone. We have the wireless, which everybody knows about, over 100 million subscribers there. But do you know we have a massive drone operation with Skyward? Do you know we have, of course, we're pushing into 5G, but with that comes 5G innovation labs, and we have a military and first responder lab. We have a Verizon connected service that's working on all these Internet of Thing applications, from self-driving cars to smart parking lots. In fact, I'm working on a deal now where we're doing an implementation where these cameras will literally monitor a parking lot to find the empty spaces. They can also be programmed to find the cars that are, you know, sitting there too long. So these are all the types of evolution that Verizon is taking with its base technology of connecting things. Now we're connecting smarter and smarter things and using those in our business.
Oh, apologies, I was on mute there. That's great. I appreciate your shining the flashlight on these other things that I was unaware of. And when you talk about like the smart parking lot, like it's really exciting to think of all these very different channels that Verizon is going down and can go down. And I'm sure you probably get this analogy a lot, but with your first point about real estate, it made me think of that movie a while back, The Founder, with Michael Keaton.
Oh, yeah.
With Love that about movie. McDonald's, and where there's this turning point, spoiler alert, turning point in the movie where he realizes he's not in the fast food business, he's in the real estate business. And that was like a significant value to their business that I would have never thought of. And so when you talk about this long history for Verizon, these centers that used to be physical switchboards, for lack of a better phrase, in these little towns, and then realizing like, oh, okay, we have that as an asset. How can we repurpose that? And I'll say one last thing for listeners, that regardless of what business you go into, there's always that need to step back and reassess what are the assets we have as a business. Maybe there's ways to leverage those assets in a way we never thought of. And you're seeing, you know, obviously Verizon is one of the very, very big, successful company. They're very adept at doing that, saying like, okay, we have these physical resources. We have this land. How else could we utilize that based on where we're going as Verizon 2.0?
And Justin, if I could just add to that point, yeah. I didn't really talk too much about Verizon Media, but Verizon Media is one of the three main arms of Verizon. Now, that is the company formed from AOL and Yahoo. You know, we're repurposing a lot of those technology to support the military. For example, Riot Studio, which is a 360 immersive studio that does augmented reality and virtual reality, we've used them to power some of our activations with the military. So again, repurposing that. We're talking about potentially implementing them around a Veterans Day activation this year. We've taken this technology that was brought into Verizon through this acquisition and really trying to use it for the benefit of telling stories, to shine the spotlight on veterans and military experiences. And so I didn't want to omit mentioning the kind of really neat assets that Verizon Media also brings to the portfolio.
That's great. And I'll ask you in a second about Valor, because I want to make sure we have a good chunk of time to talk about that. But I just wanted to dig into one thing that you've mentioned a couple times, and that is a network and networking. And I love the analogy you had said towards the beginning around, in the Marine Corps, we have fire teams. And when you get out of the military, you have to be a little bit more proactive at building a network. Any advice or thoughts around creating, maintaining a network?
I do, in fact. My answer is actually three letters, ERG. That stands for Employee Resource Group. And that's what Valor is. I do want to talk about that for a little bit, Justin, if that's okay with you, because I think that's very important in terms of a network within a network. So we know that as military members, we share a special bond, and veterans and military spouses, we speak a special language. We have a shared set of common experiences. And even if you served in different militaries, even if you served in militaries not in the United States, what's amazing to me is how consistently harmonious those experiences are of serving in the military. It is truly about giving up what you have and taking on a burden of service, which allows us to instantly recognize each other. It's the strangest thing. You can almost pick out veterans, Justin. I'm sure you've probably done this. Just from maybe a small little action or a mannerism or something that they've done, you have a sense that, hey, maybe that person served. And this network within a network is pretty neat because there's also a huge aspect of loyalty that comes from service. We understand what that is, and we show each other instant trust because we know that having gotten in there says something about your own character. And so that network within a network has taken me a long way. But let me talk a little bit about valor. Now, I want to give credit and cast a wide net here. So I came into a situation where there was this great military support group at the company I worked at when it was called AOL. It was formed by military spouses. Their husbands were deployed, and they were gathering care packages and doing a Veterans Day celebration every year. In 2012, when I finished my MBA, I had a little free time on my hands then. And so I agreed to take over the leadership of that group. So I ran it for 4 years, and we did the same things, and it was kind of neat. But then I learned that as Yahoo and AOL were coming together, there was going to be formalization of employee resource groups, ERGs. And so I successfully lobbied and advocated to make this military resource group an official employee resource group of the company. And that actually was, you know, a great thing because it gave us funding, it gave us legitimacy, and it gave us access to a whole bunch of resources across the company. And so that was a little bit of the story about how we got it formed. But one thing I want to mention is that, you know, as folks are on active duty, or they've recently left active duty, or they haven't been on active duty for a while, they probably remember, though, that there is, the reason ERGs exist, and I think this is important to kind of remind people, though, that we all got, as I mentioned earlier, a ton of superpowers from our military service, right? We talked about the initiative, talked about problem solving, leadership, discipline, all those things. And I kind of say it's kind of like the superpowers that Superman has, right? I mean, and the truth is, it comes to the point where you just can't look away when there's a problem. You are so trained in running forward and fixing things that the ERGs provide an outlet for that, right? And you may say to yourself, look, I don't know, I was just an average person serving. Maybe I didn't serve in combat or whatever it may be. My MOS wasn't that powerful. You know what? You know what Superman says? He says, on my planet, I'm just average. So now he comes to Earth and suddenly he's Superman. That's how you guys are. Maybe in the military, you're just average, but you come into the civilian world and you have superpowers. So ERGs give you that opportunity to channel those superpowers and to put them for good. And so I say, if there's an ERG in your company, step up and join it. And if there's not, do what I did and found your own ERG.
I love that Superman quote. I think that's so great. I could see that being applicable to so many listeners who maybe have a bias of discrediting or underplaying the incredible superpowers that they have. And I love this plug for, we haven't actually, man, in over 300 episodes, we haven't talked a lot about employee resource groups. When I went to business school, there was a group of veterans that was great. That was great for me to be able to plug in and connect with like-minded, similar people with similar backgrounds and kind of share notes, especially I remember around resumes and just common things that we struggled with. And I think what you're highlighting, you know, I'm saying this from someone who's had a career in entrepreneurship, I'm seeing an advantage of a larger company is that they have resources like this. They have other people with your shared background. And I think you're giving a great challenge to listeners is if that's available, step up and be part of it, even if you don't think you have anything to gain, anything, if you don't think that that's a good fit for you. And that further challenge of if you're an organization that does not have that employee resource group, following in your footsteps as you set up your own ERG that's now grown to be something really compelling. And last thing I'll say on that, since we've been talking about role models and examples, I can imagine over a decade ago when you planted the seed of this initial employee resource group, or what would become an ERG, and now how it has grown, and all the countless lives that have been touched along the way, because a very long time ago, you took the time and energy to plant that seed and cultivate it into what it is now.
Well, thank you for saying that. You know, it truly is a group effort. You know, I'll talk a little bit about this. In fact, I may talk about it now. I think when you look at one of the inspirational stories from my life, you know, a lot of times people, as you know, Justin, in business school, it's all about, well, did you read Jack Welch's book? Did you read this book? What's kind of current? What's big? What are the books you're reading? How are you educating yourself? And I think I found the seminal book in my life, the most important story in my life when I was in second grade. And it was a story called Stone Soup. It's a folk story, but it was written down in a book, and it was told, it was read to me when I was in second grade, and it really has kind of inspired my life. And I know it probably, if you think about it, it probably has inspired a lot of our lives too. And I don't know if you know the story, but let me just kind of briefly sketch it out. So the Stone Soup story is about a soldier coming back from war, and he is returning home, but he's got a long way to go. He's got a few coins in his pocket, but on his journey, he's hungry, and he stops in this town. And he starts knocking on the door, and he says to the townspeople, you know, they're all kind of clustered behind locked doors because they're not really trusting this guy. They're not quite sure what's going on. They know there's just been a war. And he says, can I buy some food from you? Do you have any food? No. Well, from one door to the next. We don't have enough. We don't even have any food. We don't have enough for ourselves. We couldn't spare anything for you. So after going through the whole town, the soldier decides that he needs to do something to kind of help this town. And what does he do? He starts a giant fire. He gets a big pot of water and he starts boiling it. Well, as the water starts boiling, he throws some stones into it. And he goes over from time to time and he takes a big sip. He's like, oh, this is so delicious. And little by little, the doors start to open. People start to come out into the square where he's built his fire, and he's stirring his stone soup. And they're like, what are you doing? He's like, I'm making some stone soup. He goes, can you smell it? It's so delicious. It's so wonderful. He goes, but you know what would make this stone soup a little bit better? Maybe we had a couple onions. And one of the neighbors says, well, I think I could spare a couple onions, right? And then they put the onions in, he stirs it. He's like, oh, this is going to be so wonderful. But you know, if we only had a couple carrots, that might make the soup a little bit better. And another neighbor says, well, I do have a couple carrots I can spare, actually, turns out. So he runs down to their cellar, grabs a couple carrots and throws it in there. And the soldiers just keep stirring and mentioning about the ingredients. And one by one, the townspeople come to realize that they actually have something that they can contribute. And at the end of this, the soldier has cooked the town an entire pot of delicious soup. And more importantly, he's unified them, right? He's brought them away from their closed doors and feared, and brought them back out to the space to work together. And so sometimes I say to myself, really, all I'm doing in the ERG, really, is I'm just that simple soldier who's stirring the pot of boiling stones and encouraging other people to throw their contributions into it.
That's wonderful. I love that because I think it also speaks to the importance of every contribution, even if small, and that how when those small contributions are put in aggregate, they become something greater than the sum of their parts. Could you share, you know, in the work that you've done with Valor, are there any success stories that stand out or anything that you'd like to share about the impact that it's had?
I think there are a lot of success stories, and I'm trying to think of those that might be most relevant. You know, I think we do look at ourselves as a combined employee resource group, an ERG, and as well as a business resource group, BRG. So we do call ourselves the business and employee resource group. You know, as the benefit to the employees, I think some of the important things really are allowing, encouraging employee engagement. This is the Stone Soup model, where basically what we do is we set up some activations and we encourage others to contribute and volunteer and participate in them. One of the most recent ones we had was very fulfilling for us as employees, and I got nothing but the greatest feedback from the employees on this one. And this one was around Verizon's support of the Warrior Games in Tampa, Florida, back in June of 2019. So for those who don't know, The Warrior Games is the original Paralympics. It's been going on for over 10 years. And in fact, it was, because Prince Harry attended one of the early ones, it was the inspiration for the Invictus Games, which happens to be a little bit better known. But Warrior Games is actually an international competition. There were teams from, I think, 6 or 8 different international countries, as well as all the military services there. But it is an opportunity for those wounded warriors to participate in a way that was really shows the enduring strength of human spirits, even when the body has suffered some injury. And we went down there to support it, and we saw some of the most amazing individuals bringing themselves in a way that was inspirational to us. So, for example, we saw a young Marine who had lost 3 of his limbs. He was out golfing. Golfing. Yes, he had a special purpose-built cart, but he was in that Florida heat and humidity. And I got to tell you, it was run by Special Operations Command. And we're like, is this part of the harassment package, guys? Because it's pretty brutal down here. This young Marine was out there with his one arm, swinging away, just loving it, just had this giant grin on his face the entire time. And we look at it and we think, you know what? When I'm having a bad day, I got both my arms and both my legs. And look at this guy. He's out here killing it in this crazy heat and humidity, and he's just eating it up and loving it. That was so inspirational for us. And we not only did we take down a bunch of employees to activate things, to be present, we took down recruiting people to talk about how we support disabilities in the workplace. We took down our Valor people to literally just kind of assist in any way we could possible. We also brought our brands down there. We brought Yahoo News down there. And they followed one of the Wounded Warriors Paralympians around. And they really, they told me how inspired they were. Sam Matthews and Bob Morrissey from Yahoo News. And they followed this man around and met his family and watched him compete. And they created this really kind of neat story to showcase Warrior Games and to show how much Verizon and our brands, in this case Yahoo News, was really behind this whole military community. And that was just one of many brand activations that we were able to do.
That's wonderful. What a great takeaway for everyone on that. That's just powerful to see that and to kind of foster and instill that sense of gratitude.
One of the other things we've really tried to do, just like you're doing here, Justin, is we tried to profile our members. So each time there's a major military holiday that comes up, and Memorial Day and Veterans Day are some of the biggest ones, we go into our ranks at Valor and we say, look, and we try to get to know everybody, try to pick some unique, compelling stories out and really showcase them. And we showcase, you know, we ask them to talk about, what did you do in the military? Tell us what you learned in the military. Tell us your life lessons that you still use today. And tell us, and this is kind of a neat thing too, tell us what you took from the military and brought to your civilian career. And it is so amazing to me that these people, just like we talked about earlier, they have these kind of hidden talents or these things that you wouldn't necessarily think were directly correlated. And they were able to apply some secret sauce to it and use it to be successful in their corporate careers. In fact, after we profiled one of our Valor members, his life lessons had such an impact that he literally went on a mini speaking tour across the company, talking to VPs and their organizations based on the little profile that we'd written up about him. So that was kind of neat. Again, an opportunity to take this military experience that we have in our rank and file and really put it front and center in front of these teams and show them, you know, this value that they're bringing to the workplace.
That's great too. I mean, it's a good reminder that most times people don't understand what military service entails. It's a very small percentage of the population that does that. And oftentimes they don't even know how to ask about that, how to have that conversation. So I love that sense of providing these spotlights to help draw out these stories of, look, like you might not realize it, but this person is doing this in their career now. And one thing they took from the military that's helping them is this, and explaining that to them, connecting the dots for them.
You know, another example of when we did that is we started, so kind of keep in mind, I'm relatively new to Verizon. I was at AOL and we didn't have a diversity hiring program around military. So what we did at Valor is we said, look, there's a real opportunity here for us to start the first repetitive cyclic diversity hiring program. And it is around military. You know, I like to remind people that when you hire veterans, you hire the whole spectrum of diversity. Veterans are of course, women. They are, you know, African Americans, Latinx folks, they're LGBTQ. They are really so many different aspects of diversity that when you hire a veteran, we say you really kind of get the veteran diversity aspect for free, because you're almost always getting two aspects of diversity there. And so what we did, though, is we said we need to start turning on this diversity hiring. So we as Valor went out there and said, let us start it. And we partnered with U.S. Chamber, the Hiring Our Heroes program, which I know you're familiar with. It's a great program. We're so proud of our ability to kind of to connect into them. What we did is then we did some targeted hiring. What do I mean by that? Well, we knew that there were some skill sets in the military that could be brought directly into the corporate workplace. So, for example, one of them, as I mentioned, Yahoo News. We went to the editor-in-chief of Yahoo News and we said, how would you like to get a public affairs officer from the military? And coincidentally, it was Dan Kleiman. He's like, I would love that because I'm looking and expanded my coverage across internet to internationally. And we brought this gentleman in who had, you know, obviously it was a West Point graduate, very successful Army career. And then he was the public affairs officer for the commanding general of Korea, the Army commanding general of Korea. And this kind of blew away our internal stakeholder, the executive. And he's like, oh my gosh, I knew you guys had skills. I didn't know you had these kind of people, you know, running around. And so we brought this gentleman in, Daniel Den, and he's been working for Yahoo News, came in, killed it there, and now is working for us permanently. But again, that's an example of where what we do is we educate. You know, we educate folks who maybe don't have experience. They don't know somebody personally. They don't have a family member. They didn't serve. With fewer and fewer veterans each year, they may have never really kind of run into a real veteran and known anything about it more than what they maybe see in the movies or on TV or hear about in the news. And this is a real life example of somebody being able to bring those directly applicable skills in and put into use day one.
That's awesome. One thing I want to ask about, I think that you're a great storyteller. It really comes through when you're speaking. And I'm wondering if storytelling has played any role in your career, if you feel it is, influenced your career at all.
You know, I think what I thought about this question a little bit, and what's kind of neat now is that generally speaking, as a corporate culture, storytelling is very much accepted as part of the leadership process. And I do draw that distinction that as a corporate culture, you know, there used to be a little bit more maybe a sense of corporate culture of I'm the boss and you guys do what I tell you. Now that's the stereotype of the military. But we those of us who have served have known that's the stereotype, but it's not true. I mean, there are some cases where it's you got to do it now because there's we're in combat or whatever it may be. But really the way things work is about personal connections, and the military is really good at that. So my first job after college, I was a Marine. I was a leader, and yet I stood up in front of my platoon for the first time. I was one of the younger people, not the youngest, but I definitely had the least experience of anybody there. They all had at least 2 or 3 years experience, and I was coming in with about a year under my belt. So I had a year of experience, and they were 2 or 3 years and 4, and some of them, you know, 10, 12 years of experience. And so I quickly realized it wasn't going to be any good just to tell them what to do. I mean, I learned that showing was more important than telling, and ultimately the way to show somebody is to tell them a compelling story. I mean, there's the thing in the military that we live by, and it's called commander's intent. So what it is as a leader, you tell your team what you want them to do, right? But you let them decide how they're going to do it. But to get that commander's intent going, you have to create this shared vision, the shared image, the shared understanding, really, of what is it that you want them to do so that they can figure out how to get it done. Storytelling is the way to do that.
That's great. I know we're getting short on time. I wanted to ask you a couple other things. So in the vein of always learning, always adopting new things, here you have a Bachelor of Arts, you've got a Juris Doctorate, and you go on to get your MBA as well. I'm wondering if you could speak about that, but also how important you feel like an MBA has been to your career success.
I will say, I think that my MBA has been the real kick in my pants that I needed to kind of take it to the next level. I mentioned that I took over the military group after I finished my MBA, because part of it was an amazing transformation that I went as a person. Like, I began to understand at a level I'd never understood before the micro and macro business needs of an organization. So at Darden, we called it the enterprise perspective. And really, it's underscored everything that I've done since then. I mean, at Valor, it means that the activations have a real positive, measurable return on investment, or ROI. So we really study this. We say, if we're going to take our time, if we're going to take our money, if we're going to take other people's time, this opportunity that we're going to pursue, what's in it for the end of the day? And that really was some thinking that was really that came out of my MBA program. And I know, Justin, you have an MBA from another top school too. So you get what I'm talking about here. But it really does help us to focus on what we're doing with our resources at any time. We have a lot of that in the military. The difference is, in the military, we didn't have a budget and we didn't have a P&L, right? We was just expending, and there's a lot of soft benefits, like being able to project our military strength, being able to be the world's peacekeeper, whatever you want to call it. But in the business world, it's taking that to the next level and saying, where's my return? What are we putting back in our pocket for the next time so we can do this again? And you know what? The other kind of neat thing about getting an MBA, it was truly a purifying process for me. I mean, it was like Zen-like. I had to strip things out of my life because I was working this high-powered job and suddenly I'm going to school full-time. I mean, it was like having two jobs at the same time. So like, I ditched newspapers, TVs, anything non-essential to my life. So that when I got that degree, I suddenly had all this free time I mentioned earlier. And then, you know, it also, the other kind of key thing for me was, it pushed my communication skills. You know, you can see my LinkedIn profile. I blogged about it. The faculty said, hey, you write pretty well, so blog. I had to find time to blog. We also had a lot of pretty heavy communications courses, was getting up and speaking extemporaneously, having prepared speeches, and, you know, really being able to communicate this knowledge. And that was something that it really strengthened for me too, to give me the confidence to get up in front of a bunch of people afterwards and talk about what I've done. And the last final point I want to make about this, so you don't all have to get MBAs. I mean, as you're looking at leaving the military, it's not required. You know, I often tell people, I feel like the military service alone is its own form of MBA. And people look at me and they go, what are you talking about? I say, it's really the masters of being alive. Those are the things you get in the military. Do not discredit that. I mean, one of the things is we take for granted, and don't forget, we're always used to being trained. We're used to learning, to training, and studying. And in the civilian world, you're going to have to seek out those opportunities. They don't come your way as much as they do in the military world. And they're less frequent, but as long as you keep the mindset of being a continuous learner, it'll open the door for you to add additional opportunities like me. So I knew this was going to be hard to get an MBA, but I also knew that I had the ability to continue to be a lifelong learner. And so in life beyond the military, you really, I think what I want to say is, you know, in terms of I want to invite anybody that's listening to this to contact me, particularly if you're a veteran or a military spouse, because I think I'm always happy to help, to use my network to help you and to kind of move you along, because it always is about paying it forward, because there have been many folks ahead of me who've given me some benefits and who, when I've reached out to them, have helped me get onto the next step. And so I want to make sure that that's one of the things I'm offering to folks that may come across my name.
That's wonderful. And for listeners, in the show notes at beyondtheuniform.org for this episode, we'll have a link to his LinkedIn profile so you can take a look there. And necessary to reach out to him. And I appreciate that. That's very gracious of you to open yourself up like that. I know that we've only got a couple minutes left here, so I would love to just leave some space at the end, which is, I'm sure there's things that we didn't cover that you want to talk about. I just want to give you a few minutes to share any final thoughts with our listeners.
You know, I will say I am grateful that I'm working at Verizon. I'm going to put a little plug in here. And to be honest, it's a plug for my employer, but it is really an amazing place to work. They go all in on military and first responders and understand how important that audience is. And what does that mean on a day-to-day basis? Well, it means that we've hired 11,000 veterans to work in our company. We are also hiring in the thousands of military spouses. That's a newer area, but we're continuing to turn on that pipeline and bring folks in. And they've allowed me to really engage on behalf of the company. That's not my day job. I'm the happy lawyer, right? But they say, look, if you want to go and recruit. You want to be part of Valor. You want to wave the Verizon flag to show the world that we're supporting veterans. We're going to empower you. And they let me do that. They let me do that during the day. I have the flexibility to kind of move my responsibilities around. For example, last Friday, we spent most of the day hosting a Hiring Our Heroes huddle in my office in Dulles, Virginia. And that was an amazing opportunity to showcase what we do as a company, our support for the military, our support for military spouses. I mean, we have this great 36-month, 100% pay differential military leave policy. That means that if you come to Verizon and you're still in the reserves or National Guard and you get called to duty, or you even volunteer for duty, or you're not even in the military, but you feel the urge to go into the military, for 36 months, we will pay 100% of the difference between what your military pay is and what your Verizon pay is. And not only that, we signed the statement of support. That means we go beyond the minimum required by law. We truly want and encourage military service here. And more than that, I think externally, Verizon powers the veteran military community and truly understands how important it is to make sure that those folks have connectivity. So one of the things we did, the military mobility tour that's still going on, is going to end just about on Veterans Day. And we're going from military base to military base to military base. And we're having trailers set up there where you can do a video message and talk. So if you're a family and you've got a military member deployed, you can talk to them. We'll connect them. We'll either send the message, or if they're around live, we'll connect them live. Or if you're a military member and you want to, at a base, and you want to talk back to your family at home. Again, that's some of the connectivity we do to really say thank you for your service.
That's wonderful. Well, Peter, I appreciate your time and advice, your thoughts on being a role model and networking. And we covered a lot of ground here today. And thank you for what you're doing to pay things forward with the military community. It's been great hearing your story.
Justin, thank you for the opportunity to tell it. I'm really thrilled I got to meet you also. And thank you again so much.
Surface.
Thank you so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Quick couple admin points. We release brand new episodes every single Monday and Thursday. Those are usually recorded about a month or so before they go live. Every Monday and Thursday, we have an interview, usually almost always with a military veteran about their civilian career. More and more, we're starting to add in experts who may not be veterans, but may have some expertise that will help the military veteran community. Saturdays, I typically post more of a behind the scenes episode, which is a free form format. I try to use what I'm calling a mullet format. And by that, I mean business up front, party in the back, talking through admin points, professional topics related to the podcast. It might be a conversation I had that week. It might have been an interview I had that week, but just trying to share things that are top of mind that may help you in more of a free form, straight from the heart format. And then the party in the back is the personal side of things, just kind of more free flowing thoughts on life, on improving oneself, just kind of whatever's going on in life and trying to be authentic and honest about those things as well. Special thanks. We have an all volunteer army of people behind Beyond the Uniform making this possible. We do this on our lunch breaks, on our evenings, on our weekends, because we love the military community. We want to give back. We want to make a difference. We want that as part of the purpose in our life that we valued in the military. So special thanks to Steve Bain. Steve does pretty much everything. He helps secure guests. He does our newsletter. He keeps the reels rolling and keeps me sane. Kathleen Dillon, the first person to join our team. She writes text transcripts of every single episode. It's wild. She keeps up with two of these a week despite a demanding career and education right now. But those transcripts help us get more SEO value, helps her audience more. Andrew Woolridge is our data guru. He helps us understand the numbers, which is the easiest way for us to figure out how we can better support you, and adds kind of the data oversight for that. Rick Healy does all of our social media. He is gaining more and more of an audience for us by getting our videos, getting our podcasts out on social channels. The best way to stay in contact with us is if you go to beyondtheuniform.org. There is a newsletter. You'll have a little pop-up that comes up. You can put your email in. We email twice per month. We try to be respectful, but it is a great way to get appraised of upcoming events, upcoming interviews, promos where companies are giving discounts to Beyond the Uniform listeners, and more. This does cost money to put on. We are committed to not charging veterans directly. And the way that we kind of offset costs is through corporate sponsors. So if you know of a company that would like to get in front of a military audience and their families, that's one way that we can both add value to our members, but also offset the costs of Beyond the Uniform and give us a little bit of budget to start expanding what we're doing. So that's the best way you can help us. If that's not something that you can do, a positive review on iTunes is greatly appreciated. Have a wonderful week. We will be back Monday, Thursday, and Saturday with more interviews. And keep up the listening. Take care.